ready.
NBC didn't have to create rape allegations to keep from selling to Bill Cosby. That's like me saying I don't want to sell you my car, but then going around telling people you rob banks.
For real talk.
Hey man, I'm just gonna say it. If you don't think you sexist, ask yourself why you champion LeVar Ball but think Cardi B should go away.
All the time.
Not everybody's gonna like you, but don't ever, ever apologize for trying to be a better person.
Welcome to the Spann Report with your host, Mr. Spann.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Spann Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Spann. This is episode number 219 of the report, and right now we're rocking out to some old-ass Black Milk, y'all. Losing Out with Royce the 5'9". Rock out with your boy. Then they got on our mayor. Let's talk about if you from the D and you don't fuck with Hex Trick or me, then you probably a square. Let's talk about the metropolitan area, venereal, spitter, still poof, burial, bitter, poof, poof. Talk about me, I'ma be on your ass. Trouble sales, I will take I to the double L. Think about hustling with a head buster who got more muscle than Cool J double L. You can pop like that, take off your whole top like back. Another body, what the hell? Let's talk about making niggas hard earn money, yours putting money on heads like I'm paying they barbers. Talking about cutting mouth, hangover, Range Rover 750. When I hit the streets, game over, nigga. I ain't never losing out. No. Yes, indeed, y'all. We are back here on a Tuesday evening, man. Fall evening, man. It don't feel like it, though. It was hot in the sun, bitch, today, man. When I was out there working hard in the sun and in the fucking humidity and the bugs and all of that shit, man. It was hot in the motherfucker, man. I couldn't wait to get home into this AC, y'all. Like, real talk. I couldn't wait to do it. Couldn't wait to do it. But, yo, man, it's been a week since the last time I talked to y'all. And we got a lot of shit to talk about. We got some shit that came up. It wasn't even on the docket, but I got to put it on the docket tonight because so many, like, the response to this is fucking amazing. So I really do feel like I need to talk about what's going on with Colin Kaepernick and Nike using him as part of their promotional campaign for the 30th anniversary of the Just Do It campaign, right? But yeah, man, let me turn off this young Black Milk, man. Yeah, real talk. Let's turn that off. And yeah, man, got a lot of stuff to get into. Really do. But before we do, of course, I got to remind you guys how to get in touch with your boy Spann here at the Spann Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. This area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, I'll play them on the show, respond right here on the show. You can also email me here at feedback@thespannreport.com. That's feedback@thespannreport.com. Leave those emails, of course, and I'll read those emails here and respond to you live here on the show. Follow your boy on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Spann. So go ahead, follow me there. Chop it up with me throughout the week. And we, you know, I talk a little bit more on Twitter a little bit lately. You know what I'm saying? Try to be more active on those Twitter streets. But go ahead and follow me on Twitter, Instagram, man, and chop it up with me. Also, join the Facebook group for the Span Report podcast, man. Join the Facebook group with, you know, it's basically like a place where I do announce where I'm going to do the show. I put, you know, the when I'm getting ready to go live and stuff like that, I put that off in the Facebook group. You know, sometimes other folks who listen to the show, man, they put stuff in there. It's like, it's a bunch of like-minded people who like fucking with us over here at the Span Report podcast. So go ahead and join that group. Also, man, hit up the website, www.thespanreport.com. Everything's available there. You can watch replays of the show. You can vote in the polls. You can leave comments there, man. You can get, you know, links to our store. You can hit up the other shows on the Span Report Podcast Network, the Beer and Chicken Podcast, and there is another show coming very, very soon. So yeah, man, go to the www.thespanreport.com and be hip to all of that new information when it becomes available, right? Also, man, those 5-star reviews, I really would appreciate it if y'all left your boy some 5-star reviews, man. Real talk, I suck your dick. No, I wouldn't do no shit like that. I wouldn't do that, but I really would appreciate it, man. I really would. 5-star reviews help the show immensely, man. It's your way of putting down for the show. It lets other people know that you really rocking with us over here at the Span Report Podcast, man. It doesn't take but 2 minutes to do, and it doesn't have to be a long review, man. Just say like, yo, 5 stars, I fuck with this, and there you go. You know what I'm saying? So we really do appreciate everybody who does the 5-star reviews, man. Those will get read here live on the show as a way to show our appreciation. And it doesn't cost you a dime, man. Real talk. And we do really, 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 really appreciate everybody who does that, right? But yeah, man, let's get into it. I thought I was going to have some random thoughts. I really don't have many random thoughts, man. I just kind of want to get right into the rigmarole of what we got to talk about tonight. And of course, we got to hit the news. All right, so first things first, as we get into our news, man. Like I said, I wanted to add this to the docket, right? Colin Kaepernick has been revealed to have had a deal with Nike for the better part of the last 2 years, right? The better part of the last 2 years, he's been an endorsee of Nike. Nike hadn't really found a way to use him. And, some other shoe companies started looking into like trying to sign Colin Kaepernick, maybe pull him away from Nike or whatever. And Nike, you know, pulled the deal like, you know, we really want to keep this guy. And I really think like the cynic in me, like the cynic in a lot of folks is like, yo, man, this is just a ploy for money and all this other things. And, you know, what does this have to do with the protest and all this stuff? And yo, man, first things first. I am not one of those people who believes that activists should die broke, right? I am not one of those people who believes that because you are a proponent of something larger than yourself, then that means that you should die destitute, alone, and without means whatsoever, right? And you got folks like Jason Whitlock who's already saying this is a ploy for money from the get-go, yada, 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 while at the same time just flat out ignoring what this particular cause really meant. You know what I'm saying? Like, Colin Kaepernick has been putting his money where his mouth is, man. And I know we should normally talk about this shit on Beer and Chicken, but Colin Kaepernick has been putting his money where his mouth is, man. He's been donating money. He's been donating to suits to guys who are trying to get the, you know, go on job interviews and things like that, man. He's been educating kids on knowing their rights when it comes to how to interact with the police. Yeah, man, like, the dude has been really putting in the work. He has been doing a lot more. He hasn't been as vocal as a lot of folks would like for him to be, but the work is speaking for itself. The work is out there for you to go and, you know, kind of observe and check out. Most folks aren't going to do that. Well, at least the people who are calling themselves opponents of what Colin Kaepernick stands for, right? So, yeah, man, Nike has Nike has used Colin Kaepernick as a spokesperson for their 30th anniversary of the Just Do It campaign, right? Now, of course, this doesn't come without a pushback, without equal fucking, like, people are reaching really hard to be mad at something, right? They don't really know what, but they're reaching really hard to be mad at something. And so Big Rich or whatever from like Big and Rich or whatever. One of the rich, a country singer, right? He goes on Twitter and he's got this Twitter picture of his engineer, sound engineer, or whatever. They cut the Nike swooshes. He cut the Nike swooshes off his socks. He basically destroyed a pair of socks that he already owned. There was another person who cut the Nike swoosh off of the shorts that they were wearing. Of course, they already bought the fucking shorts. Like, I really need white people, the white people who do this sort of shit, I really need y'all to explain this to me. Why do y'all feel like tearing up shit that you already bought is hurting the company in any way whatsoever? Right? How is that hurting anybody whatsoever? You're basically tearing up your own shit. It's the same thing when like when a football player or a basketball player leaves a team and he goes to another team, and the fans in that city of the team that he left are burning their jerseys and all this other shit. Like, well, that's your money. You spent $140 for that jersey, or you spent $300 for that jersey. They already got your shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, even when Colin Kaepernick first started this kneeling thing, man, people were burning their Colin Kaepernick jerseys. Yo, authentic NFL jerseys aren't cheap, man. And like, they are at least $300 to $400, right? So they already got your $300 to $400. You just burned $300 to $400. Now, I don't know what that says about your financial acumen. Doesn't really seem that all that smart to me, but you know what I'm saying? Like, how do you guys really come to the conclusion that in order for me to express that I am really, really upset with what you're doing right now, I'm going to tear up my own shit, or I'm going to go buy some things that we're protesting? Remember, everybody was like, they were conservatives who were protesting Starbucks by actually going to buy more Starbucks and stand outside and holding up signs and shit. Remember that? Like, I need y'all to boycott your man Span like that, man. Like, go to the Span Report podcast store right now. Go buy yourself some motherfucking t-shirts. Go buy you some onesies. Go buy you some coffee mugs. And then get on YouTube and destroy that shit on YouTube. Help your boy out. If this is how y'all gonna be protesting from here on out, white people don't know how to protest, man. They don't have problems like that. Right? They ain't been having problems like that, man. They got this protest thing all wrong, right? So now, another thing, man, and it ain't just the white folks, man. I've been seeing some black people saying some really ignorant shit too, right? So one of my friends on Facebook said some really stupid shit, man. And we're friends, but yeah, he said some really stupid shit. And he was like, yo, man, y'all talking all this shit about white people tearing up their own shit. Meanwhile, when a verdict comes down that black people don't like, y'all go out and y'all tear up y'all own shit too, right? And I guess he's talking about like rioting and things like that. Now, first of all, most of the people who are tearing things up, like the stores, most of the people in the neighborhood don't own that. Somebody else owns that, and they are not from the neighborhood, more often than not. Not saying that I agree with them going out there tearing the shit up, but what I am saying is somebody else owns that shit. They're not tearing up their own shit. They tearing up somebody else's shit. And second of all, when you buy something only for the distinct purpose of destroying it, you're not really protesting, bruh. It's the weakest of protest of all means. I'm going to buy your shit only to destroy it, but meanwhile, I still paid for it, right? I still paid for it. That's stupid. I will never understand that level of logic, right? Now, another person, Travis, what's this dude's name? Clay Travis, who's a sports broadcaster or sports somebody. He's really a troll, right? He's a sports dude, kind of like a right-wing nut. And he was making a mockery of the fact that, like, okay, so this is the right wing talking point that they're using right now, right? Like, because Nike is endorsing Colin Kaepernick, and this is before everyone, I guess, knew that Colin Kaepernick was that he was endorsing Nike. He already had an endorsement deal with Nike for a few years going now. That this was all a ploy for him to make money, right? Excuse me, that the protest had nothing to do with him actually caring about what was going on in the community. It was a way for him to make money. It was a way for him to up his profile, so to speak, right? Now, the interesting thing about this was this Clay Travis dude, while talking shit about Colin Kaepernick making money off of his stance, he started hawking his book on fucking Twitter. While talking shit about Colin Kaepernick making money off of his stance. Like, the hypocrisy is really, 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 really thick when it comes to these people, man. And it just goes back to the idea of, like, you know how folks, like, I kind of alluded to this last week or maybe the week before last, where I talked about how people kind of front, you know, when it came to who was down with the civil rights movement back in the 60s. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody and their mama says, swears up and down, like, yeah, man, I was really down with that Dr. King, man. He was a really good guy. You know, he was one of the best Americans we ever had, man. Like, all you have to do is, like, kind of Google this shit, and you realize that Dr. King was very unpopular during his time. In much the same way, this is what's going on here. Like, you got a lot of people who think of Colin Kaepernick very unpopular. He's very unpopular when it comes to the larger population, especially with white folks, especially with Trump supporters, right? Very unpopular. But it's one of those things where, like, okay, they don't understand the reason why he's protesting, and he's doing it in a way that they don't really feel good about. However, maybe he should just, like, stop rabble-rousing, right? Maybe he should stop rabble-rousing. Maybe he should just, like, you know, kind of go away, like, stop, you know, bringing light to this bullshit that, you know, I really just want to watch the fucking game. You know what I'm saying? And in much the same way with Dr. King, man, as much as everyone says that, you know, they appreciate the work that he put in, they understand the nobleness of his movement and of his purpose. Yo, man, when he was out there doing it, he was hated too. He was hated too. So, yo, with Nike doing this thing, man, and not only just with this, you know, they've been, like, really standing behind Serena Williams when the French Open was banning her cat suit, which was for her blood clots that she has. She has a condition where her blood clots, and it was a way for her to kind of, you know, mitigate that. And the French Open is just like, yeah, man, no cat suits, right? And I think a lot of it really was about her physique more so than her, you know, the actual cat suit in and of itself. Other women have worn cat suits while playing tennis. They couldn't fill out that goddamn cat suit the way that Serena Williams filled out that cat suit. And so I think that the French Open, not really being used to that level of physicality, so to speak, in the female tennis game, yo, man, Nike's been standing up behind their people, and they've really been ingratiating themselves within the black community and with the social justice movement. Now, another thing too to consider. I think Nike, and this, I think Jemele Hill also said this, man, that Nike is pretty much like trying to find themselves on the right side of history, right? Find themselves on the right side of history. I think, and this goes back into the way that we looked at Dr. Martin Luther King, the way that we looked at the civil rights movement. Like, it wasn't popular while it was going on, but as the years passed, as we got further away from it, as we were not so, it wasn't so immediate, you know, it became, you know, Dr. King became more favorable. Dr. King has a holiday on his birthday. You know what I mean? Like, the nation kind of softened its stance towards that movement, and then it got to a point where it wasn't popular to say that you were against this, right? And much the same way that right now, there's a lot of people who are not really fans of Colin Kaepernick who will, in 30 years, maybe 20 years, will say, oh yeah, I was always down, you know? So, yeah, man, kudos to Colin Kaepernick. Kudos to Nike for this campaign, man. Yo, man, it gives me yet another reason to pull out the Black History Month Vapor Max, man. Real talk. I love those shoes, man. But yeah, man, I just threw that in the docket because it was kind of breaking. I had the show, like, scripted and everything, and, like, gotta put this in. So yeah, man, that's going on, man. Another thing, man, that's in the news. Yo, check this out, man. This is actually some pretty good news, as a matter of fact, if I can find it. Well, I'll be damned. Let me see. Let me refresh this here and see if it's in here. Nope, it ain't here. So let me, man, Pocket be like playing your boy, man. Pocket be playing your boy, man. Okay, I didn't have my tags ready. I didn't have my tags. Hold on a second. Okay, but California has actually done something really, really good. They have become the first state in the union to eliminate bail for suspects who are awaiting trial. And that doesn't work. So we're going to go with this one here. God damn. Yeah, goddamn, man. That wasn't the sound effect that I wanted. I can't get my shit together to save my life right now. But we're going to read the story here. This comes out of ABC 7 News. It says, California will become the first state to eliminate bail for suspects awaiting trial under a bill signed by Governor Jerry Brown. The bill signed Tuesday will replace bail with a risk assessment system. Although it's still unclear how the system will work, it will go into effect on October 1st, 2019. Brown's signature gives the state's judicial council broad authority to reshape pretrial detention policies. Each county will use the council's framework as a basis to set its own procedures for deciding whom to release before trial. Most suspects arrested for nonviolent misdemeanors will be released within 12 hours of being booked under the new law. Those facing serious violent felonies will not be eligible for pretrial release. Opponents of the legislation say that it gives judges too much power. Some worry dangerous people will go free and won't return for trial. Supporters say that the change will end the unfair practice of imprisoning people simply because they're poor. Now, interestingly enough, some of the opponents are saying that they're worried about dangerous people going free. But the people who are able to go free, according to this article, were the people who are arrested for nonviolent misdemeanors. Meaning someone who's in custody for manslaughter or murder or felonious assault or domestic violence of some sort, those aren't misdemeanors, man. Those people aren't going to be able to get out. But those people who are caught on like a weed charge, or those people who are caught on like, vagrancy or some shit like that, those people won't be penalized with having to stay behind bars simply because they can't afford the bail and their family can't afford to get the monies out or take the monies out to get them out of jail. And that's what there's a lot of people who are stuck in county prisons or county jails simply because they can't afford to pay the bail before they can get out or even assist their attorney in their, in their court trials or whatever, man. Like let these people go. Like, I've been arrested. Right? I've been arrested. I am very fortunate. The first time I got arrested, I was very fortunate to have friends who were able to just kind of come up with $1,000 real quick to get my ass out of jail for bullshit soliciting without a permit charge. Right? Right? The second time, I was very, very fortunate to be able to put up $200 to get out of jail for a unlawful possession of a weapons charge in Chicago. Right? Very fortunate to be able to have that. A lot of people aren't necessarily as fortunate as I was in both of those instances to be able to get out of jail and to be able to fight their cases effectively because they're locked down and they don't have a way to get to get means. Like, can you imagine, like, you have a job, and although you have a job, you can't afford to get out of this situation, and so now that job you had is gone because you've been missing for the last week and a half or a month or 6 months. No, they're not going to hold your position for you, right? And it's a cycle that it's a deadly cycle, right? Or a vicious cycle, in the sense that, like, people who want to be able to, who are accused of crimes and want to be able to effectively defend themselves for said trials can't do so because they first of all, they can't even afford to get out of jail, which means they probably won't be able to afford a real attorney. Not to say that public defenders aren't real attorneys, but I will say that my experience with one was, yo, just plead out, bruh. Just plead out. Because they got so many cases that they're going through that they just like, yo, they trying to get through all of them. Hey, man, just plead guilty to this shit, get probation or whatever, and you'll be all good. Not knowing you may be fucking yourself later on because you got this guilty plea on this misdemeanor or felony charge, and you can't get this shit expunged as easily as you would like for it to be, right? So yeah, man, California doing a good deed, doing away with bail for nonviolent offenders, man. That's good news. We very rarely get the chance to talk about a whole lot of good news here at the Spare Report, but that's good news, man. So real talk, I really do. I'm a fan of that, right? Another story, man, that's in the news, and of course we can't always have good news, right? Can't always have good news, but Detroit, man, Detroit schools are shutting off the water due to elevated lead and copper levels, right? So, yeah, it ain't just in Flint, y'all. is not just in Flint. So I'm going to read this story here. This comes out of the Free Press here in Detroit. It says the Detroit School District is shutting off drinking water to all of its schools after test results found elevated levels of lead or copper in 16 out of 24 schools that were recently tested. Although we have no evidence that there are elevated levels of copper or lead in our schools, Although we have no evidence that there are elevated levels of copper or lead in our other schools where we are awaiting test results, out of an abundance of caution and concern for the safety of our students and employees, I am turning off all drinking water in our schools until a deeper and broader analysis can be conducted to determine the long-term solutions for all schools, Nikolai Vitti, superintendent of the Detroit Public Schools Community District, said in a statement Wednesday morning. Vitti had initiated water testing of all 106 school buildings in the spring to ensure the safety of students and employees, he said. This was not required by federal, state, or city law or mandate, Vitti said. This testing, unlike previous testing, evaluated all water sources from sinks to drinking fountains. The Free Press was shadowing Vitti on a day in May when the issue of water quality in the schools came up during a cabinet meeting. Earlier that day, Vitti had learned the test results at several schools had come back showing elevated lead levels. Now, one of the questions that I have about this is, if they're finding this in the schools, then also, how prevalent could this be in the homes surrounding that school, right? Because I don't necessarily believe that it could be an isolated incident that is only something that is happening within the schools. That it could probably be something that is, you know, it could be a neighborhood thing. It could be a systemic thing in much the same way that like we saw what happened in Flint with the change of the water source there. Now, the funny thing about this is Detroit has a reputation for having a really good water source. Like one of the biggest things when Detroit was going through its bankruptcy was for the city not to lose control of its water department. Like there was talk of the water department being sold off because of its filtration system and everything else. It was supposed to be a really good filtration system, one of the best in the world. And it was a big thing that Detroit kept control of the water department and its water filtration system. So I'm wondering if they're finding this or elevated levels of copper and lead in these school buildings. And I think they tested out of six, they were 16 out of 24 that tested for elevated levels of lead and copper. I just kind of wonder how is that also affecting the surrounding homes of those schools, man. I don't believe that it's just something that's concentrating itself within the schools. It may be something that's going on within the areas as well, man. But yeah, man, like we got to get Snyder the fuck up out of there. Oh man, I can't wait to vote in November, real talk. But that's in the news, right? Another story that's going on here in the news, man. There was a police officer who was convicted of murder. A police officer convicted of murder.
What?
Yeah, I said that, right? So let's see. We are going to read this here out of the Griot. And there was a Dallas police officer by the name of Roy Oliver who was found guilty of murder in the shooting death of 15-year-old Jordan Edwards, who was fatally wounded while trying to leave a house party with his brothers in Balch Springs, Texas, last year. As the jury handed in his verdict, a photo of the young teen rested underneath Judge Brandon Birmingham's bench where it was left during the week-long trial, according to the Star-Telegram. News of the guilty verdict spread quickly on social media, with users praising the outcome that happened to fall on the anniversary of the 1955 murder of Emmett Till. Now, I saw a little bit of the social media response to this, and You know, one of the interesting things, man, is like how a lot of these stories are, how we talk about these in like, it's so tribal, right? Where people who actually saw video of this young man being gunned down spoke as if this officer being held accountable was a travesty, right? That police officers are above the law and they should be able to be judge, jury, and executioner, right? It's sad, man. Like the way that it, like this really has boiled down, man. Like that you can see for yourself a gross over, what's the word that I'm searching for here, man? Abuse of power. A gross abuse of power on video, and people will still say that him getting the 15 years that he was sentenced was too much. That he should never have been convicted at all. That that young man probably deserved to have those rounds pumped into him. All right. One of the few opportunities, one of the few times that we have someone being held accountable, a police officer being held accountable for, shit, going above and beyond their scope of authority, right? Going above and beyond their scope of authority. But yeah, man, there was justice for once. Justice for once when it came to the case of Jordan Edwards, man. His killer found guilty and sentenced to 15 years, man. And they act as if they don't know why Colin Kaepernick was kneeling, right? Yeah, man. So, yeah, that has been our news, man. Let's get us something more, let's get a little bit more upbeat, right? So let's go into our news, well, not our new segment. We got our motherfucking bumper back, y'all.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Oh, snap. Let me do that again.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right, so, hey man, we got some goofy shit going on, man. We got some really goofy shit. Oh snap, I need to do this really quick before I get into the blue blazes. I'm sorry, y'all. Let me pull this back up. Okay, so yeah, man, there's some really, really, really goofy shit going on, man. Have any of you guys heard of Kyle Green? Is that name familiar to any of you guys at all? So, Kyle Green is a candidate for the Minnesota House of Representatives, and he's running campaign ads in that state because he wants people to vote for him, right? You know, that's what you do, man. When you're a politician, you run campaign ads and you try to get people's attention. You try to stand out amongst the varied number of candidates that are out there, man, vying for those seats, vying for those positions. You got to make yourself stand out, right? So Kyle Green decided that the way in which to stand out amongst his fellow candidates, well, I'll be damned, notifications and shit. But Kyle Green decided he wanted to stand out amongst his peers by calling himself a nigga in his campaign ad.
Well, I'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
Yeah, man, he did that. So let me go ahead and screen share this, man, so you guys can check this out right along with me. And I haven't watched this video, man. I've just kind of heard about it. I haven't watched it. So let's watch this together, y'all. Let's do this together. Check this out.
Hi, I'm your neighbor, Kyle Green. I'm running for District 18A, State Representative. I'm not asking for you to vote for me as your leader. I'm asking for you to vote for me as your public servant. The primary duty of a state representative is to protect all the rights of his constituents. I want to be your state representative. I want to be your public servant. And I want to be your nigger. Public servant, and I want to be your nigger. Your public servant, and I want to be your nigger. Your public servant, and I want to be your nigger. Your public servant, and I want to be your nigger.
What the fuck, man? Oh man. Wow. This is what we've come to, man. Like, this is what we. I'm sorry, man. Oh, let me minimize this so I can see what the hell is going on, man. But yo, So I wonder, man, did anybody get at Kyle Green after he put that out? Like, yo, man, what the fuck were you thinking? I want to be your nigger. What the fuck were you thinking, man? Now, I'm sure there was an article with this. Let me read this. This comes out of thehill.com. It says, Kyle Green, an organic farmer running for a state House seat in Minnesota, told voters he wants to be their nigger in a campaign ad released earlier this month. I want to be a state representative, I want to be your public service, and I want to be your nigger. Now, Green made the comments at the end of a video in which he addresses the camera asking for the support of voters in Minnesota District 18A, where he's running as an independent. The video has been viewed over 10,000 times on Facebook as of Thursday afternoon. Green told the Minneapolis Star Tribune that he used a racist slur because he wants citizens in the state to focus on the real issues at hand. Like, okay, so by calling yourself and saying you want to be they nigga, this is going to bring them closer to the real issues, right? The real issues. How? What issue were you bringing up in that moment? Were you bringing up the fact that the taxes probably need to be lowered? Were you bringing up the fact that you had a plan to maybe repair some roads? How about the school funding in your district? Maybe there could be something done for, I don't know, public works in like water department, whatever the fuck. Like, what is the concerns of your, what are the concerns of the people or the constituents in your district? And I doubt very seriously that you calling yourself a nigger, telling them that you want to be their nigger, is the most effective way to get across a message of what's important and what the real issues are. He says, we need to unify as a society and we need to stop dealing with trivial matters. Green said the N-word is part of the American history, regardless of race, while adding, it's part of my history being African-American, white, and Cherokee Indian. Ah, okay. Okay, I see what this is. Like, there's that special snowflake syndrome going on that's sprinkled in there real tight. Like, you know, because, you know, I'm a bit white and I got some Cherokee in me. But, yo, I've got black in me, too. And I can say this. I can say it. OK, you guys can't say I can't say it. I can say it because I'm part black. OK. Nah, dog. That's
not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Not at all, man. Like, not at all. But Kyle Green, man, he wants to be your nigga. I want to see the vote tallies when the campaign is over with. I really do want to see how many people vote for Kyle Green. I'm gonna be paying attention to that race now. I'm gonna be paying attention to that. Real talk. Another story, man, that's going on in the news now. This is actually one of the reasons why I titled this particular episode the way that I did. Kanye West is in the news, or had been in the news earlier this week. And it was because he decided, that he was going to do an interview with WGCI in Chicago. A wide-ranging interview. I think the interview lasted over an hour. And he had an opportunity to talk about the slavery comments that he made on TMZ, right? Now, I'm going to play a bit of this particular video. I'm going to play a bit of it. As a matter of fact, let me pull this up. Because, of course, I want you guys to watch it with me, right? You know, we family. What's up, Jack? We're going to watch this together. And let's see here. All right. So let me maximize that. Let's check out what Kanye got to say, y'all.
Seen guys like that ever step forward with their problems about depression and how they're dealing with mental illness? I do feel like there are some people with power that have tried to speak on it. But you being Kanye West, it kind of holds a different little bit of weight. I will agree with that, because like I said, my mother was even upset about that.
His mom was upset, y'all.
I'm tripping on my mom was upset about something Kanye West said. So I do think it's big enough for you to apologize about it.
Well, I thought Valet didn't get on my album because I thought his mom might have been upset about that comment. Valet, why
you on the album, bro? You know, I think that I said this to you off the air. You know, I speak from a black woman's perspective. I'm African-American. I do love the human race, but I'm not going to lie, I'm about my people. And I feel like there's not too many people that in the African-American race, when they speak, the whole world listens. you have that power. When you listen, you could tweet something and the whole world pays attention. So from my point of view, and this could be a selfish point of view, I always want you to speak for black people and in the betterment of black people.
One thing is, like, I don't know if I properly apologize for how that slave comment made people feel. So I want to take this moment right now to say that I'm sorry for hurting. I'm sorry for the 1-2 effect of the MAGA hat into the slave comment. And I'm sorry for people who felt let down by that moment. And also, I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to talk to you about what the way I was thinking and what I was going through and what led me, you know, to that. And I just appreciate you guys holding on to me as a family. And this just proves how much love, you know, and sometimes I think people don't feel the love. When I say I can still feel the love, because I come home to Chicago and I hear 3 Drake records, I don't hear a Ye record. So, you know, sometimes you don't, and I would say, but we got all mine now, but sometimes you don't feel the love because you're looking for it in certain, you're looking to get validated. You hear people comment, negative comment on everything. It's these slides just too small. What's going on? Why, right. You know, it's just all so much negativity that, you know, in a relationship, maybe somebody will do something just to see if you still love them. And one thing that I got from the TMZ comment is it showed me how much black people love me and how much black people count on me and depend on me. And I appreciate that.
I'm glad you said that, because black people do count on you and they do appreciate you. But,
and love me.
And love you, absolutely. but you talk about people seeing the love, and I really just want to be open with you, man. And I feel like a lot of people felt like we lost you to the Kardashian family. And I don't know if I've ever heard you address that.
All right, now, I'm going to tell y'all this, man. When I first saw this, I was like, you know what? I accept that apology, right? I felt like this, man. Like, we live in a time where saying you're wrong, saying I fucked up, sometimes players fuck up, you know what I'm saying? Like, we live in a time, man, where like that is looked at as a weakness. You know what I'm saying? The dude who's currently occupying the White House right now thinks that apologizing when he's wrong is a sign of weakness, right? And lots of people, man, they just don't want to be wrong, right? And it happens. Like, nobody's perfect. It happens. But nobody wants to say, I'm sorry. No one wants to say, I apologize. I was wrong. It was my bad, man. No one really knows how to give real apologies either. You know, like, you'll get apologies with qualifiers on them. Like, you know, I apologize, you know, for those who felt like, you know, I apologize for those who felt offended. You know what I'm saying? I don't really apologize for what I said. I apologize for how you feel about what I said, right? And to some degree, Kanye did a little bit of that here, right? Like, I apologize for how my slavery comments leading into the MAGA hat thing made people feel. Right. But then you go into, like, there was another part of the interview where he's basically getting caught up in the semantics. Like, well, I was saying, like, you know, I said to me, it feels like it was a choice. Right. And if you are saying this in the middle of said apology, said apology doesn't mean shit. Now, like I said, I vacillated on this only because, like, when I saw that first clip, I saw a clip of it on Facebook and I was like, damn, like, yo, man, I ain't been able to listen to no Kanye for like 4-5 months, man. I haven't been able to do it. Like, I haven't listened to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. I haven't listened to College Dropout. I haven't listened to Yeezus. I haven't listened to Watch the Throne. I haven't listened to none of his shit. Like, nothing. for about 4 or 5 months. And I'm like, damn, why did he do that? I had just said, like, on the last podcast, I'm like, man, why did he do that? Because I like his music. But it's hard for me, and I know this isn't necessarily for everybody, but it's hard for me to be able to enjoy your shit when I know, like, when I know these things about you, right? Like, I kind of long for the times where we didn't know as much about these celebrities as we do now. Social media has kind of made it where I think we have way too much access to these people, right? The people whom we look forward to, you know, we look to for entertainment, the people we look to for sometimes artistic inspiration and all of these things, man. Like, I feel like because of social media and because of the 24-hour news cycle, man, we have way too much information about these people, and we know way too much about these people, and it complicates me being able to enjoy their art. Like, with R. Kelly, right? Like, you can't separate R. Kelly's art from his life, because a lot of the things that R. Kelly is talking about, yo, it's it's in his life for real, man. Like, this motherfucker, he been telling us for a long time. Same thing with Mystical. He was telling us for a long time. I came in with my dick in my hand. That made me leave it with my foot in your ass. Be smooth. Or cool or some shit like that. Right? So it makes it really difficult for someone like myself to be able to enjoy said art. And so when I first heard this, I was like, yo, man, I can appreciate what Kanye is saying here. I fucked up, right? And then you listen to, there's other parts of this particular interview, and I'll have it posted on thespanreport.com if you guys want to check it out for yourselves. But there's other parts of the interview where he's talking about his mental health diagnosis. He's talking about the fact that a lot of the people who used to be around him when he was coming up as Kanye West aren't necessarily around him now. And he's seeking that, which is one of the reasons why he said he was in Chicago and he had like some work to do on some, you know, some other album or whatever. But he's seeking the people who were along for the journey when Kanye West was becoming Kanye West. And that some of the people around him were looking at him as, you know, excuse me, as an opportunity. Like, this is Kanye West. Like, you know, he kind of blamed the people around him for letting the TMZ thing happen. Didn't take real responsibility for it, but he kind of blamed the people around him. Like, yo, we need to pull this back. Or they should have pulled this back, right? Now, interestingly enough, as he's apologizing or not apologizing, like, the interesting thing about this is, like, the people who would look at Kanye West when he was saying the slavery comments, and they were talking to, you know, every nigga I know just damn near became Kanye West whisperers, and they were like, well, this is what Kanye really meant. And this is what I got from what Kanye said. And I agree with what Kanye said when it comes to that slavery shit. Like, yeah, that shit does sound like a choice to me. It's, like, there was a lot of slaves who, Harriet Tubman said she could have freed a lot more slaves if only they knew they were slaves. You know, you saw that shit all over, up and down Twitter, Facebook, and everything else, right? But those same people got very quiet when Kanye West started talking about, yo, the fact that he was probably manic when he was, you know, going on that outburst on TMZ. That he was maybe having an episode, a mental health episode, while he was putting that out into the world, right? Everybody got real quiet about that. And then on top of that, you start thinking about, well, okay, if Kanye West is on the radio right now apologizing for the shit that he said, then what were you really defending? Right? What are you really defending? Because a lot of what Kanye West had to say was about, I would say, anti-blackness. There's a sentiment of that there. There's a lot of people who feel like, yo, black people are their own worst enemy. And those people who think that are not just white people. There's a whole lot of black people who believe that too. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later. Right? But Kanye West gave this interview on GCI. And at first, I was like, yo, you know what, man? I can accept that. And then I listened to more of the interview. And I was like, God damn it. God damn it. Why'd he do that? Why did he do that? So yeah, man. Kanye West almost got your boy. He almost got your boy, man. I was like, man, I was ready to be like, yo, man, I can finally pull out my Beautiful Dark Twist. Like, that was my favorite Kanye album. Probably the most fucked up, but that was probably my favorite Kanye album. And I have not listened to it in months, dog. I can't do it, man. But yeah, Kanye West went on ahead and apologized / unapologized on WGCI on the radio earlier this week, right? So that was in Blue Blazes, man. Now, another story that's going on in Blue Blazes is, this is actually a bit of an update. We talked last week about the homeless guy who gave up his last $20, gave up his last 20 to a woman to get gas. She was stranded. She gave up, he gave her his money, and her boyfriend came up with a GoFundMe, right, to help get this guy off the streets. And that GoFundMe was funded up to the tune of a little bit more than $400,000, right? So he got, they got the money, $400,000, and they've been like kind of dicking this dude around with his money, right? So check this out. We got this update of what's going on with this money. And wait, that's not it. That's not it. I know I got it. Okay, so yeah. The update is a judge has ordered that they give this man the rest of his money, right? So we're going to go over here to, ABC13.com. I guess it's a local affiliate. It says, what started as an act of kindness ended up on the subject of a court hearing Thursday. Homeless man John Bobby gave up his last 20 to help Kate McClure, who had run out of gas on I-95. McClure was so moved that she and her boyfriend, Mark D'Amico, started a GoFundMe account for Bobby, a man who was also struggling with addiction. The fundraiser garnered approximately $400,000, which amounted to roughly $360,000 after GoFundMe's fees. Bobby claims he only received $75,000 in cash, goods, and services. The defense attorney said Bobby actually received $200,000 from the money donated. Bobby has now taken action in the courts. In an exclusive interview, John Bobby says that Kate McClure and Mark D'Amico had complete control over his money, and they used thousands of it to go on lavish trips, shopping sprees, and gambling. Hey, I wonder if there's video attached to this. Let me see if there's some. You know what? That can cut down my fucking reading. Right, so let's see if we got a video attached to this, and I'll be damned if we don't. Yeah. So let's see, is this video? Yes, that's video. So let me pull this up so you guys can watch this with me here in the chat room. Let's act like we're trying to do something today, computer. Just trying to act like we doing something today. All right, so yeah, here we go. Let's watch this video together, y'all. Where'd it go? Oh. Okay. And well, all right. Here we go, y'all.
Is the brewing legal battle between a homeless man and a New Jersey couple. A judge ruled today to take the money away from the couple and to account for every single dime that was raised in a GoFundMe account. Action News reporter Chad Perdelli spoke exclusively tonight with the man who, of course, is now fighting for what he believes is rightfully his.
Chad. Yeah, Shari, in this exclusive broadcast interview, John Bobbitt says Kate McClure and Mark D'Amico had complete control over his money, and they used thousands of it to go on lavish trips, shopping sprees, and to gamble.
I wish, I hate that it came to this.
John Bobbitt is back on the streets. He has no money and is fighting to reclaim what's left of over $400,000 raised on GoFundMe last year.
I didn't want to be pressuring to get a lawyer or do anything because I didn't want to appear ungrateful.
14,000 people donated to help Bobbitt after he gave his last $20 to help Kate McClure, who'd run out of gas off of I-95. McClure and her boyfriend, Mark D'Amico, set up a GoFundMe account and claimed they'd buy Bobbitt a house and set up two trusts. It never happened.
We'll find out tomorrow how much remains when the money is transferred from the defendants to our escrow account.
Bobbitt estimates he received about $75,000, including a camper and pickup truck the couple bought in their names, not his, and which were eventually sold.
I have to ask them for everything. It was kind of, in the beginning, it was a joke, like they were like my parents. But the joke stops being funny after a while.
In a nationally televised interview this week, the couple says they worried Bobbitt would spend the money on drugs, and their attorney disputed the $75,000 figure in court today.
Mr. Bobbitt received in cash, as well as goods and services that were paid for out of this money, of over $200,000.
Action News began following McClure and D'Amico's spending habits online beginning late last year after receiving an anonymous tip that the couple was misspending the money on themselves.
Man, they taking
trips
and shit?
In just a few months, McClure posted pictures and videos of a New Year's Eve bash in Las Vegas, helicopter rides, trips to New York with front row tickets to the Broadway show The Book of Mormon, and shopping excursions, and on her arm, an expensive Louis Vuitton handbag.
Oh, Louis.
Self-described.
Yeah, those ain't cheap.
I think it's pretty hypocritical for you to tell me I can't manage my money because I might spend it on drugs. And you're doing the same thing.
McClure is an administrative assistant with the state of New Jersey. D'Amico is a carpenter. It's unclear how the couple paid for the questionable items, but they've publicly denied spending any of the GoFundMe money on themselves.
They have said they will have a forensic accountant. They have said they're lying fine with the trustee. They have said they'll open up the books. What more can they do? I would urge anybody to withhold judgment until that's been made public.
And in court today, the judge ordered all remaining money be moved from the couple's personal accounts to an escrow account within 24 hours and a complete accounting of the money completed by September 10th. Attempts to reach the couple for comment have been unsuccessful, and their attorney had no comment today outside of court.
All right. So, yeah, man, turn over the money. Give up my money. You know what I'm saying? Like, this dude had to go through them to get every dime of the money that was supposed to have been raised for him. Like, I get it. Well, first of all, no, I don't get it. How are you going to have a fundraiser for the benefit of someone else, and yet the person who has that, who the monies were raised for, they have to go through you in order to get said funds, right? And then immediately after all of this money comes through, suddenly y'all going on these lavish trips, y'all buying these lavish motherfucking items, y'all are going on, y'all are taking excursions, all sorts of things with this man's money, man. Because truth be told, yeah, give up that money. Pay that man his money. When people donated to GoFundMe, they were donated to GoFundMe thinking that that money was going to go towards him and his, you know, it was a way to pay it forward, so to speak, the way that y'all said y'all were paying it forward, because he gave you that $20 when she was, you know, when she was stranded. And it's amazing how greed can change a person, right? You may have they may have started this completely innocently and had really good intentions, and then they saw how much money came through, $400,000, when their original goal was only $10,000, but you got $400,000. Like, well, shit, why does he got to get all of this money? I mean, if it hadn't been for us, shit, nobody would even know what the fuck was going on. We should get some of this too, right? So yeah, man, they need to get that man his money. Real talk. And look, from the looks of it, a judge ordering that those funds be excommunicated from their checking accounts and to a trust, which it should have been in the first fucking place. Yeah, man, it looks like he's going to get his money, man. But we are done with our blue blazes, y'all.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
But y'all know what time it is. All right, enough of that shit. All right. So, our first story here in Proud to Be an American, man, because of course we're not really proud of this shit, but it's in the news. Donald Trump, the dude that is currently occupying the White House right now, he ordered his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, to investigate allegations that the nation of South Africa was wholesale killing white farmers and taking their land, right? And he did so because of a segment that he saw on Tucker Carlson on Fox News.
What?
I said he did so because of a segment that he saw on Tucker Carlson on Fox News.
What?
Come on, man. The motherfucker watched Fox News, all right? So, let's see. We're going to read this story here. This comes out of NPR, actually. It says, for much of Wednesday, the topics the president mentioned on Twitter were familiar ones. There were tweets about former associates Michael Cohen, who pleaded guilty to 8 counts in federal court, and Paul Manafort, who was convicted of eight counts. There were harsh words for Democrats and the claim that he was the subject of a witch hunt. But then President Trump commented on something unexpected. He tweeted that he had asked Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to closely study the South African land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killings of farmers. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers. The comment appeared to be inspired by Fox News host Tucker Carlson, whom Trump tagged in the tweet. On his show Wednesday evening, Carlson had criticized the State Department for not weighing in on how South African President Cyril Ramaphosa proposed land reforms. I have asked Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to closely study the South African land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers. That was a tweet from Donald Trump. Trump's tweet was an unusual way for the president to use the word Africa on Twitter for the first time since taking office, as Washington Post points out, but South African leaders failed to see any flattery in the name check. Hours later, the country's official government Twitter account hit back hard on the president's medium of choice. South Africa totally rejects this narrow perception, which only seeks to divide our nation and remind of us our colonial past, the account tweeted. Even as the diplomatic dust-up flared, with the South African presidential spokesperson later calling the tweet unfortunate and misinformed, onlookers unacquainted with South African domestic policy may find themselves wrestling with a reasonable question. What? Now, check this out, man. There's been so much talk about whether or not Donald Trump is racist or not. I remember when Omarosa was coming out with her book and she had a mixtape that she was dropping every other day when it came to what people were saying was untrue about what was in her book or whatever. And maybe that possibly that Donald Trump was on tape saying nigger or some shit like that, right? The thing here is that what Donald Trump is doing, it's almost like it's like a confirmation of what everybody like kind of thinks already, right, about Donald Trump and his racism. And it goes back to the nationalism that we see here in America. And, you know, like when it comes to white people here in America, like white nationalists here in America, white people are afraid, especially here in America, white people are afraid of becoming a minority in this nation, right? Now, you've got the census reports that are saying that white people will become a minority by the year 2040. You've got, I believe, there's the talk of the immigration problem that we're seeing, the browning of America happening because all these illegals are flooding into the nation, right? And they're browning this country and we're losing our country, right? They're afraid of becoming a minority in this country. And one of the reasons why they're afraid of becoming a minority in this country is because of the ways that they've treated minorities in this country, right? Now, Donald Trump is their last big like haymaker swing at like not becoming the minority in this country or seizing control and locking control within what could possibly be a minority very soon in this nation. Well, if we can concentrate control of the government within this small block of people, then we can stave off any of the advantages that being a minority or being a majority brings, right? And you're starting to see this when it comes to the voter ID laws, and when you start talking about the way that gerrymandering, where they pick like certain politicians are able to pick their voters when, you know, when it comes to the census and who wins these elections. It gets to a point where they can start picking their voters. They'll restructure their districts to pick the people who are favorable to vote for their party, right? So they're finding ways to try to consolidate power for a minority of this country. I read something earlier this week, and I don't remember where exactly I read this shit from, but there was talk of the fact that the majority of the Senate is actually representing the minority of the country. I think they said maybe 18% of the population is overrepresented by their Senate representation in the United States Congress. I'm not sure how fucking accurate that was. I mean, and I probably need to read some more about it before I even go any further with believing that. But you see efforts by the far right. You see efforts by a lot of Donald Trump's rhetoric and the people whom he's emboldening. And a lot of it is fear of becoming a minority. And the reason that they're scared of becoming a minority is because they know they've been treating the people who've been minorities in this country like shit. Right? They've been like treating us horribly. And they're terrified of that, right? And so they look at something like this, what's going on in South Africa. And white people have been the minority in South Africa for a very long time. They've always been a minority, but they've been a controlling minority. They control the government. They control the economy. They control public policy. They control everything about South Africa, right? Apartheid subjugated black people in their own homeland, right? Colonialism, like white people came down there and like just set up shop and like totally subjugated the people who were already there. And so when apartheid was finally toppled and black people became a part of the government and leading, you know, and leading that nation, they were lucky that Nelson Mandela, who would at one point was considered a terrorist. Right? Nelson Mandela at one point was considered a terrorist. But Nelson Mandela, when he came into power in South Africa, actually tried to reconcile with those who he had every right to hate because of the way that they treated him and his people while they were in power in South Africa. And so what South Africa represents for a lot of white people here in America is the fear that if black people or brown people or yellow people or red people come into any sort of control here in America, that their fate is they're going to be taken out. They're going to be mistreated. They're going to be subjugated. And so this is what Donald Trump is tapping into by talking about, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to have my Secretary of State go and look into this. There really isn't a whole lot to look into. Much of it is false. But this is what Donald Trump is tapping into. He's tapping into the fact that these white people are very scared of becoming minorities in the United States of America, a country that they call themselves proud to have founded. Right? This is my country. My people founded this country. We made this country great, and we're going to make it great again. But that's what they're scared of. And Donald Trump is tapping into that. So when they talk about whether or not Donald Trump has a tape of him calling anybody a nigger, it's like, well, why do you need that? Donald Trump has been out here like, yo, he's calling Mexican rapists. He told a judge that he said some shit about he couldn't actually hear his case because he was of Mexican descent and the dude was born in Indiana. You know what I'm saying? Like we've seen countless instances of Donald Trump being a racist sack of shit. But that's what he's tapping into, that white fear of becoming minorities here in America. If you allow these people to brown up this country and to take control of this country, they're gonna come kill you the way that they're killing them in South Africa, supposedly, allegedly. I'm gonna have my Secretary of State look into it. That's what's happening, right? Pay attention, y'all. Another thing that's going on, man, and proud to be an American. Now, this is one of those things where, this is one of those things where I really am perplexed by black people who are aligning themselves with the Republican Party. Really, I'm always perplexed by that. With these sorts of things going on, I kind of wonder why you would want to be associated with these people, right? So this story here comes out of the Daily Mail. And this is actually a story about Carla Maloney, all right? Now, Carla Maloney is a Republican committee. She's the Republican committee of Beaver County secretary, okay? Now, she's upset with the fact that NFL players are protesting during the national anthem, as many Republican and right-wing folks are, right? But apparently, she takes it so far that she thinks that those who are doing so are baboons for doing so.
God damn!
Yeah, man. Baboons, yo. So check this out. We're going to read this story. Like I said, this comes out of the Daily Mail. It says a Republican committee official in Pennsylvania has resigned after it was revealed she called NFL players who took the knee during the national anthem baboons. Carla Maloney, the Republican committee of Beaver County secretary, also called them ignorant blacks and told them to go back to Africa in a racist Facebook post. I'm tired of these overpaid, ignorant blacks telling me what I should believe in, she wrote in one post on her personal page in 2017. I will tell you what I believe in, and that is our flag, the national anthem in America, period, end of story. You don't like it? Go to Africa and see how you like it there. We are all Americans, not African American, not Hispanic American. We are all American. Now, first of all, I want to say something, man. Like, I'm going to need the white people who keep telling us to go back to Africa. Like, many of us have never been there. Okay, we were like, some of us were born right there in Detroit, some of us in Pittsburgh, some of us in San Francisco, some of us in Canton, Mississippi, some of us in Tallahassee, Florida. Some of us have never been. The vast majority of us has never been to Africa. So telling black people to go back to Africa is kind of silly, considering the fact that you probably do know where you're from. But your ass ain't never. We're not telling you to go back there, right? Another thing. I'm gonna need y'all to like stop wrapping yourselves up in this flag so heavy. This flag that y'all pretend to care about this flag shit. Y'all really do. I don't think y'all really care about this flag as much as y'all say y'all do. She says she also proclaimed that her hometown, Pittsburgh Steelers, were now just as bad as the rest of the overpaid baboons. You respect your flag, country, and our national anthem. How many men and women have lost limbs or died to protect this country, and you baboons want respect, Maloney continued. If you want respect, you need to earn it, and so far you haven't. Stop watching or going to a game and paying for overpriced food, water, and tickets. Let's see how the baboons get paid when white people stop paying their salaries. Maloney also proclaimed that there was reverse racism in America and predicted that a civil war would happen sooner than later, according to the Beaver County Times. Now, as a black person who is Republican, how do you feel about these things being said about you from someone who's also part of your party, who considers those who would use their First Amendment rights, who would call them baboons for doing so? How do you feel about someone who calls you ungrateful blacks because they are executing their First Amendment rights, who totally ignores that the reason that these guys are kneeling is because a armed services veteran suggested kneeling as opposed to sitting, because that's how Colin Kaepernick started. He was sitting, right? How do you feel about that? How do you reconcile siding with people who don't give a fuck about you whatsoever? How do you do that and still hold your head up and still be able to like kind of like walk the walk? You know what I mean? Like, not like just be able to like just kind of hold your head up high and have pride in who you are when you align yourself with people who would call you a baboon the minute you step out of fucking line. Now, I know some of y'all get mad when people call y'all coons, but like, yo, man, like, they calling you baboons over there. Right? How do you reconcile that? I'll never understand how. I'll never understand it. I really won't. I just can't. But yeah, man. What's this lady's name? Carla Maloney. She's indicative of what's going on in the Republican Party. She's probably more than likely a Trump supporter, voter, campaigner. How do you reconcile that with your blackness and your politics? How do you reconcile that? They don't give a fuck about you, and they are willing to say so publicly like that. So, yeah, man, that's him proud to be an American, where Republicans are openly calling black people baboons. Right? Now, another story we got here in Blue Blazes. Oh, this isn't Blue Blazes, man. It's proud to be an American's band. Get your shit together. Yo, man, this actually is... I wasn't expecting this to be in Proud to Be an American, right? But there was a story. Like, y'all know that Aretha Franklin, her homegoing was earlier... What was it? Friday? Last Friday, right? And, yo, let me say something. Anybody who went to the Aretha Franklin funeral, like, yo, man, I hope y'all got paid. Like, who stayed the whole, like, 6-7 hours... Man, I hope y'all got something. Y'all should have got like 2 15-minute breaks and a half hour lunch, man. Them the rules. Them is the rules. I hope y'all got y'all lunch breaks and y'all breaks, like your cigarette breaks or something. Cause that was a long funeral. Long. I ain't knocking it. Get it how you live. But that was long, yo. Right? So there was a pastor who gave a eulogy during this particular funeral, and his name was Jasper Williams. Now, Jasper Williams is a pastor out of Atlanta, Georgia, I believe. And yo, man, he had some slick shit to say, man. Like, he was talking shit about single moms, man. Like, you know, a single mother can't raise kids, man. Like this, he said something to the effect of, a single mother raising children is like an abortion after birth, right? He talks shit about the Black Lives Matter movement. As a matter of fact, let's just go here and read this story. This comes out of WXYZ.com. Because, well, I'm going to just read the story, right? It says, the late Aretha Franklin's family said Monday that it found an Atlanta pastor's eulogy delivered at the Queen of Soul's funeral last week to be offensive and distasteful. The eulogist, the Reverend Jasper Williams Jr., was criticized for a political address that described children being in a home without a father as abortion after birth and said that black lives do not matter unless blacks stop killing each other. Franklin's funeral was on Friday. He spoke for 50 minutes and at no time did he properly eulogize her, said Vaughn Franklin, the late singer's nephew, who said he was delivering a statement for the family. Franklin said that his aunt never asked Williams to eulogize her since she didn't talk about plans for her own funeral. The family selected Williams because he had spoken at other family memorials in the past, most prominently at the funeral for Franklin's father, minister and civil rights activist C.L. Franklin, 34 years ago. Williams has not backed down from anything he said at the funeral and said he respects the family's opinion. I understand it, he said. I regret it, but I'm sorry they feel that way. Now, here's the thing. During this week, of course, like, you know, as the funeral was going on, man, many people had a lot of stuff to say about what was going on at the funeral, man. The Franklin funeral, the Aretha Franklin funeral was like social media gold because everybody had something to say about what was going on. It was like a family reunion. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody was watching it. I was at work, so I couldn't really like keep up, right? I was at work. Really shouldn't have been. I had the day off. Didn't know it. Shouldn't even been there. But yo, man, people were talking about it, right? And I saw people being upset with what Jasper Williams was saying at the time, and I didn't have really a chance to watch it until later on that day, right? And I'm watching this and I'm listening to this dude talk about single motherhood, and I'm thinking to myself, like, man, how disrespectful is it that this motherfucker is talking shit about single mothers at a funeral for a woman who was a single mother, right? Like, how ironic is that? Like, how fucking how clueless could you be to not even think that, like, oh shit, Aretha was she wasn't married. Oh, shit. I probably shouldn't, you know, right? But it also goes into, you know, there's the adage, and I know a lot of dudes, man. I know a lot of right-wing talking heads. I know a lot of hotep motherfuckers. I know a lot of people who would talk shit about the fact that, like, there's the 70% of black mothers are single, right? And it doesn't even account for the fact that black fathers are actually involved in their children's lives. They're just not married to the mothers of their children, right? They're involved, just not married to them. That's what single mother is. She's not married to the father of her child, right? That's all it means. It doesn't mean that this dude isn't paying child support. It doesn't mean that this dude isn't taking his kids to tutoring class. It doesn't mean he's not helping them with their homework. It doesn't mean that he's not making sure that they get to soccer practice or baseball practice or football practice or basketball practice. It doesn't mean that he's not disciplining his children. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means that the parents aren't married, right? That's all it means. But Jasper Williams is at a funeral of a single mother talking shit about single mothers. And I saw a whole bunch of people on my social media feeds, man, on Twitter and on the Facebook. And they were talking about, like Aretha Franklin's family is the one that invited him. Like, well, y'all got beefs with what Jasper Williams said. Well, shit, y'all need to take that up with Aretha Franklin's family because they the ones who, like, that invited him. And then you get word that, like, yo, Aretha Franklin's family is like, yo, this was some bullshit. And those people are subtly quiet. They don't really have a whole lot to say. Not a whole lot to say. Well, I don't see what he said wrong. You know what I'm saying? I don't see what he said wrong. Like, y'all need to stop fucking. Y'all need to start having babies with some more responsible niggas and all this other. And it becomes a thing. It becomes a thing where, because what Jasper Williams was preaching really about, and this is something that we've talked about here a lot on the Span Report, is respectability politics. What Jasper Williams was talking about was respectability politics. Black lives don't matter until we stop killing ourselves, is what Jasper Williams said at a eulogy for Aretha Franklin, who died of pancreatic cancer. He gets to talking about black lives matter, don't matter unless we stop killing ourselves. Now, if you listen to this particular podcast for any length of time, you already know how that goes. Right? You know that crime is intra-racial. Most people are committing crimes against the people who look exactly like them or just like them. White people are committing crimes against other white people. Black people are committing crimes against other black people. Hispanic people are committing crimes against Hispanic people because we are self-segregating. Right? As much as as much integration is going on, like, for the most part, people are around their own kind. Right? And the crimes that are happening are against people who are right there in our vicinity. The vast majority of the time. But this idea, this respectability politics idea, I need to say this again. But there's a lot of people who believe that these respectability politics makes them more pro-black, right? It makes them more pro-black. That's how they see this, that it makes them more pro-black. And the reason why they say that is because they think they're like, yo, man, I just want us to do better. I just want us to, like, I want us to be proud of us, man. Like, but for the most part, your solution is about how white people are going to perceive us. Many of the times, man, when you hear people talking about black on black crime, they're saying, like, well, shit, well, how they gonna respect us if we keep killing each other? You know what I'm saying? We gotta fix our own house before anybody else gonna come over here and respect it. Like, yo, it's about how white people are perceiving you and how white people are, what their comfort level is surrounding black people. That's what that's about. And so when you have a whole bunch of, when you got black people talking that respectability politics shit about, well, we need to stop killing each other. Although I agree with that sentiment, I don't think anybody would, like, yo, man, no, we just keep on killing each other. No, nobody agrees with that particular sentiment. You don't want any motherfucking cookies for saying, like, yo, we need to stop killing each other. Everybody agrees with that. But if you negate the fact that, yo, the crime is happening because, yo, this is who these people are around, and black on black crime is kind of a misnomer, then you promote this anti-black sentiment, and white people are using that very same rhetoric against you. It's a way to make you more palatable to white people. And I need four feet. I'm gonna need some more of my folks to stop giving so much of a fuck about what white people are thinking about them. Right? Because no matter what you do, they're going to have a problem with you. No matter what it is. Your life will be so much freer when you stop giving a fuck about how white people are perceiving you, especially white folks that ain't paying you, right? We got to do better, man. We got to, you know, like these white people, man, they, you know, how they gonna respect us? Like, fuck them. Should be your attitude. Fuck them. Should be your attitude. So, as I was listening to and as I was reading a lot of the conversations around the Aretha Franklin funeral, especially around Jasper Williams, man, like, again, those people who were champion, it almost goes back to that thing with with Kanye West. When Kanye West was out here talking that slick shit, and there was a whole bunch of niggas who was like rah-rahing him, and then he comes back and says, well, I'm having a mental health episode, my bad. And those niggas get quiet. And it's the same thing with this Aretha Franklin funeral. Like, yo, I get what he's saying. Yeah, man. Yo, we need to stop doing that. Yeah, we need to, like, yeah. Black lives don't matter, man. Fuck Black Lives Matter and all this other shit. And then the family is like, yeah, that was some bullshit. Suddenly these same niggas who were like big up in Jasper Williams are fucking church mice. They quiet as fuck. So, yeah, man. Jasper Williams, man. Like, I almost made him like ass hat of the week. I really did, man. But I didn't. But he does lead us into our ass hat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And our ass hat of the week is Jasper Williams defenders, and also Bishop Charles Ellis defenders as well. Y'all are ass hats this week. Okay. Now, of course, if you watched that Aretha Franklin funeral, you saw that interaction between Bishop Charles Ellis and Ariana Grande. Now, Charles Ellis is the pastor of Greater Grace Temple here in Detroit, one of the largest congregations in the city. Have a really big compound campus on 7 Mile. I want to say like right off 7 Mile and Telegraph. Really big campus, man. They used to have a really big church, and then they just like kind of expanded, man. The church is huge. I've never actually been in the church. I'm just saying I've been around that motherfucker. It's huge, right? But Bishop Ellis was on video holding Ariana Grande really close. Some say too close. Holding a little bit of side boob on Ariana Grande. Now, I've had some conversations with my wife, and like my wife, you know, and I'm not only just my wife, but other people were talking about how maybe, you know, the contact was a little bit incidental because he was a little taller than her and she was a little bit shorter, and maybe he wasn't necessarily trying to do that. But it also kind of goes into the argument. It goes into the topic of what Ariana Grande was wearing, right? And I saw a lot of people over the course of, you know, the week and during that particular service, who was talking about what Ariana Grande was wearing and how she was drawing her, you know, way too much unwanted attention to herself. But the interesting thing about this is, like, the people who were giving her, like, who we can see giving her some of that attention were people like Louis Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Bill Clinton. Like, they was peeping, man. They was looking for the cakes, right? Now, one could say that, like, Ariana Grande was And yes, you can feel the difference between side boob and waist. He could have moved his hand. I agree with you wholeheartedly, right? But one of the things that's real interesting about this is like how much people were putting the onus on Ariana Grande's dress for how the men around her were behaving. As if these men, these elder men, these men of esteem, these men of privilege, these men of prominence, these men of position, how much they were putting the onus on her dress as opposed to holding these motherfuckers accountable for what it was they was doing. I saw people who were upset that folks were even calling Charles Ellis out for how familiar he was. Like, yo, you can have that same conversation with Ariana Grande and not be touching her, dog. You can say, you know what? I need you to come back up to the podium really quick. I want to acknowledge you. I really do want to show my appreciation for the talent that you hold and for what you display here today. I really do want to say, first of all, I'm sorry for not even knowing who you were. Second of all, I'm appreciative of why you're here and what you brought to this service. He could have did that and not had any fucking hands on her whatsoever. And yet he chose to wrap his arms around her, keep pulling her into him. You can look at her face, man, like she was very motherfucking uncomfortable and she was trying not to make a scene because, of course, this is being televised around the fucking world. And there's thousands of people in the pews right now watching this happen. But somehow the onus is on her for how she's being treated. Right? The onus is on her for how she's being treated. Not the onus on the person who's currently violating her to some degree. Some would argue that it was an honest mistake. Maybe. I doubt it, but maybe. But I saw so many people defending that. Right? People talking about, man, y'all need to stop worrying about these preachers, man, and make sure you getting right with God and everything. Like, yo, man, like, I can do both, nigga. I can make sure I'm right with God and also say, yeah, man, what you're doing over there is pretty fucked up. You need to cut that out as a man of God. Right? We can do both. It's like chewing gum and walking at the same time. I'm pretty sure some of us are able to do that. And we can also expect some level of accountability for people who are in leadership in much the same way that we expect it from police officers, right? People who are put in positions of authority should also be held accountable for when they step out of line, when they go over and above and beyond their level of authority. And Bishop Ellis didn't have to touch that young lady. He didn't have to grope that young lady. And he was only apologizing after he got caught. Because people were paying attention, like, yo, man, do you see what the fuck is up with his hands, man? What is he doing? Why is he acting like that? Why he do that? Like, so, yeah, man, y'all earn y'all ass hats this week for defending not only Bishop Ellis, but also Jasper Williams as y'all, again, become like Kanye whispers. Y'all, oh, I get what he's saying. Nah. It just feels good to say y'all better than other black people sometimes. I know. But y'all are the assets of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ.
The champ is here. 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 The champ is here.
All right, now our champ this week here at the Spin Report Podcast is Rihanna, right? Rihanna is giving back, y'all. And damn it, where the hell did my story go? Ah, this some bullshit. This some bullshit, man. Rihanna is taking funds from her highly successful cosmetic line, Fenty. I believe it's Fenty Beauty, and she's giving it to a really worthy cause, man. Here it is. There we go. I found my damn story. But she's giving proceeds from her cosmetic brand. And we're going to read the story here. This comes out of RollingOut.com. It says, giving back never looked so good. Rihanna is using Fenty Beauty line to contribute to a cause, and she's offering fans an opportunity to do so as well. On August 1st, 2018, Robin Rihanna Fenty's namesake cosmetic brand, Fenty Beauty, announced a new partnership with the Clara Lionel Foundation to help fund mission work in education and emergency responsiveness. The Clara Lionel Foundation was established by the singer in 2012 in honor of her grandparents, Clara and Lionel Braithwaite. Fenty Beauty's groundbreaking inclusivity and ability to resonate with people around the world makes them an ideal partner for CLF, and we couldn't be more thrilled, Justin Lucas, CLF's executive director, said. So, throughout the month of September, Fenty Beauty has committed to donate 100% of the proceeds from the limited edition Diamond Ball Out Kilowatt Freestyle Highlighter to help improve the livelihood of people around the world. The name of the metallic highlighter coincides with the famous fundraiser, the Diamond Ball. The third annual Diamond Ball brought out Beyonce and Jay-Z, Cardi B, Kendrick Lamar, and more. The benefit also raised over $5 million to support the foundation and its mission. This year, the Diamond Ball will be held on September 13, 2018 in New York. Insecure star Issa Rae is set to host the event, and Donald Glover will perform. The star hopes customers who buy her Fenty Beauty products will feel just as good about looking fabulous as they do about contributing to this cause. If you're not into makeup, you can still contribute to this cause by visiting ClaraOnlineFoundation.org. So, yeah, y'all. Rihanna giving back, not only in the beauty space with the Fenty Beauty line, because I know a lot of women who have really taken to that line, but also giving back in a charitable way as well, man. So Rihanna is the champ of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast, man. Real talk. But it is time for me to get up out of here. I ain't ate nothing all day, y'all. Your man Span is hungry, and it's late. It's already like 10 o'clock, and I ain't ate shit, right? but before I go, of course, I got to get back, well, let you guys know how to get your man Span here at the Spirit Report Podcast. Respond to me here and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, I'll play them right here on the show. Respond to you right here on the show. You can also email us here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave those emails, of course. We'll read them here live on the show as well and respond to those joints, right? Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your man throughout the week. 5-star reviews on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio, man. We really do appreciate everybody who does that. Leave those 5-star reviews. It's your way of putting down for the show, man. It doesn't cost you a dime, man. Go ahead and do that. We really do appreciate y'all. Hit up the website, www.thespanreport.com. Everything's available there. Watch this replay of this show. You can also play the podcast on your phone and stuff, man. If you don't have a podcast catcher, man, go to www.thespanreport.com and get yourself some Span Report fix right there on the website, right? Also, you can vote in the polls and leave comments on the show, man. You can go watch old episodes of the whole nine, man. Everything's available at thespanreport.com, along with the Beer and Chicken Podcast, man. Everything's available there, right? And for all of your Span Report needs, I just told y'all where y'all can get your Span Report needs, man. But you can also go to the Span Report Podcast Network store at T Public, man. Those links will be in the show notes. You can go to the T Public store for the Span Report. Get yourself a t-shirt. Get yourself a hat. Do we have hats? No, we ain't got hats. But we do got mugs, and we do got water bottles, and we do got coffee mugs, and we got, like, mouse pads and shit, and we got, like, phone cases and stuff, and we got hoodies because it's going to get cold, man. It's about to start getting cold. Get yourself a hoodie. Wrap yourself up in this Span Report warmth. You know what I'm saying? But we about to get up out of here, man. I appreciate everybody in the chat room. Shout out to Brianna and shout out to Jack. And I'll talk to you guys again soon. So until next time, fam, peace.